Hi Aida, wenn ich morgens beim Yoga die Sonne grüße und sie abends mit einem Sundowner wieder verabschiede, wenn ich nur einmal packen muss, aber 5 Länder erleben kann, wenn ich jeden Tag an einem neuen Ort aufwache und mich dank dir trotzdem wie zu Hause fühle, dann kann ich uns kaum erwarten. Entdecke mehr auf aida.de oder in deinem Reisebüro.
Everybody, welcome to Meltdown Comics in Hollywood, California, the Nerd Melt Theater. Harmontown is now in session. Welcome to the stage, the mayor of Harmontown, Dan Harmon.
Thank you. Welcome back. So we were in Austin. I have a little cold. Nothing contagious. It's just everyone that has a cold is an expert at that. Definitely not going to get you sick. I'm just if you're wondering why I sound a little more like Willie Nelson or David Duchovny, now you know why. I'm looking at my phone. I'm looking at what the shit we got to get through because we got all kinds of friends coming to talk to us. We got to do the South by Southwest breakdown with our friend Kumail, who we didn't get to see out there, but I want to bring him out as soon as possible and just kind of download with him about Austin.
Kumail's photo was everywhere.
Yeah.
On the back of the pedicabs, little bicycle rickshaw thingies, you could not move a muscle without seeing Kumail's gorgeous little face everywhere.
Because he's in this HBO thing. They're promoting the hell out of it.
Holy
down there.
Smoke.
So it was Orwellian.
Did the community ever get
at the exact place where you're taking off your shoes and having your ass searched by the TSA, Kumail Nanjiani's head, it's like staring over you in Austin.
Casting a wry glance at you as you,
But before we get there, we don't want to torture him by talking about that while he's in the wings. But I just wanted to, here's our pop culture minute.
Pop culture minute.
Well, there's some things everyone is talking about, but they're not of any actual import. But everybody's talking about them because we live in a hive mind. All right. This hive mind thing and its relationship with our individual lives and also the things that actually are important kind of intersect with this concept today. This news that I woke to this morning on Twitter that Fred Phelps, the West Baptist Church fellow who's just famous for its "God hates fags" slogan. That he's on his deathbed. The reason we get that news is because his son said something on Facebook. In the same Facebook message, his son threw out the idea that Fred Phelps had been excommunicated from the Westboro Baptist Church for a year or more. I started doing like a little Nancy Drew Googling because I was like, what do you mean he was excommunicated? So, I should care about more important things. I should be Googling how to give Africa clean water and figuring it out. But instead, I spent a good 40 minutes today going like, well, when did Fred Phelps get excommunicated? What does that mean? It's just really interesting to me. There's a lot of straight gay advocates on Twitter today, and I'm not taking anything away from them. I'm not going to high road people who are high roading people. This is a great chance for everybody to spike a football on the grave of an absolutely unrepentant homophobe, somebody who was the lightning rod for everything that we we say is the reason why we need to be progressive. Like the whole idea, you know, it's like this. But and then you start peeling back the layers and you go, well, why was this guy famous? I started reading blogs by you know, advocates and you know, gay bloggers. I thought that would be funnier than it was. But, like this sort of like spirit rose through the lard that was like, okay, let's do what this guy didn't do. Let's not pick at his funeral. Let's look at this guy for what he was. He was a crazy old man. He had a congregation of about 11. And I think the reason why he was famous is because we all have this sort of impulse in our minds to protect ourselves and each other. And it's like, and where has he been since this excommunication? This is the point where I'll invite anybody who knows more about this than I do. I just want to dump what I know on the table so that you're not coming up for no reason. But was he excommunicated possibly because he found out he was dying and, like most people, wanted to just say before he went out, sorry, I fucked up. I did that because I was angry, and no matter how many times I tell you you're not going to live forever, I realized right at the end that this is no joke.
Wait,
and
you're saying that his church might have excommunicated him because he repented about not being homophobic?
These are the weird things, is that his son, who's long since out of the church, like all of his sons, I believe, his Facebook entry said, well, my dad is on his deathbed, and he's been excommunicated for a year. And in the body of that Facebook entry, comments on the idea that the family won't let anyone talk to this guy. That they won't let anyone who's also excommunicated talk to him. That's what make me go, what's going on here?
The idea being that
this is all just gossip and garbage. This isn't news.
To
this
get
is
excommunicated
just
would be to not be as homophobic as you're supposed to be. Back on that stance.
This is what I'm asking. Like the guy, the God hates fags, Colonel Sanders, is sick and dying, and was apparently excommunicated a while ago, and no one can talk to him. Including people who have also been excommunicated, which he is. That's what, and I kept trying to untangle that, and I spent 40 minutes and then I gave up. So does anybody in the audience, able to untangle any of that? Am I, okay, everyone, I see three heads shaking. So that's good. That means now we imbue it with our mythology, which I believe is probably, like the uplifting part of that is, there's an old man dying.
Because in a properly functioning church, you get excommunicated for saying the things that he said. Your theory is that he might have been excommunicated because he stopped toeing the party line and stopped being
Here's my theory. It's not based on science at all. I don't care. Because I'm a fan of story and character and mythology, and this isn't news, this is gossip. This guy was only ever famous. God bless everyone who made him famous, because this whole thing furthered, in my opinion, you know, It's a catalyst. It fires up gay rights advocacy when you look at somebody standing outside a Navy funeral with a sign that says God hates fags. It's like that was the whole point of this. It was iconography. Like this person didn't have tanks outside of Poland. This person had a couple of fucking rednecks hanging out with him in his living room, and that was his congregation. But the interesting story about this, as he lies on his deathbed, is he dying in isolation? Does he actually want to say to somebody that he's sorry? Which is the actual only, you know, is he being denied that? That's what's crazy to me. That's what's fascinating.
We have to find out. I hate mysteries.
Well, we'll find out, you know,
so we have that,
2 days from
we now. Have that and the Malaysian plane looming over our heads right now.
Malaysian plane segment! Play the Malaysian plane. Oh, there's a plane that was flying and it disappeared and nobody knows where it went. It's the new balloon boy. It's a Malaysian plane. But it's more tragic. Because real human lives are happening. Do you remember the Balloon Boy?
Yeah.
But here's the part of the Balloon Boy thing that I didn't remember and never knew about. I was busy, you know, I was making TV history somewhere when Balloon Boy was happening. I was floating over the treetops of Fox having a pitch meeting. So Balloon Boy, like, oh, there's a boy in the balloon, and the balloon is floating all around. And I saw you shake your head at the audience, and I saw them. I know you guys are all against me. Balloon Boy was, you know, we were watching the balloon.
You're the Balloon Boy.
You're the Balloon Boy. There's a Rick and Morty writer pulled this up on the YouTubes and showed us. It's like, do you guys remember when this happened? That on CNN or something, I think it was CNN. The moment when it broke that the Balloon Boy thing was a hoax, a deliberate hoax, not a hoax on the part of the kid, but an engineered hoax on the part of the dad. I didn't remember any of this. I didn't care about the Balloon Boy. I was just, you know, you're busy during certain public events.
He was like, never in the balloon, right?
He was never in the balloon. Okay. And then the dad was like, but there's a news clip. Has everyone seen the? Yeah. Where? But with the fart. Okay, most of you, yeah. Okay, so I didn't know anything about this.
I don't know about
Kumail's
that.
Kumail's shaking his head, so that's good enough for me. Are you shaking your head going, why are you trucking out the Balloon Boy?
No, I don't know what the fart is.
Okay, good. That's what I thought. Okay, later on tonight, Kumail Nanjiani will be our guest.
I have another reason to be upset. You now have a better Kumail impression than I do.
That was spur of the moment.
That was pretty good.
I don't.
God damn it.
You walk a fucking tightrope, you do a Kumail impression because Kumail's career has become a monument to not fucking selling out, not trading on the things that make him, you know, different from the people that are watching. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not articulating that well enough. But I remember early on him coming out and every conversation I had with him talking about, like, oh, yeah, I'll go for this audition. I won't go for that one. And here's the meticulous reason why. And it's fucking, you know, the fact that it pays off if you're smart and actually furthers it. Anyway, I'm embarrassing him. But so the last thing you want to do is reward all of that by going like, oh, I'm Kumail. Oh, look at me. but that is what will, that will be the end result of everything. Yeah, because if he becomes Woody Allen, then what happens? Oh, good, I'm Woody Allen. You know, like you celebrate someone's.
Was that Kumail or Woody Allen?
All right. So listen, just Google this. Find it somehow.
They're on a couch, right?
They're all on a couch. They're all on a couch in a row. And the dad is like, hey, why didn't you? The CNN wants to know, why didn't you come out when you were hiding? And the kid goes like, hi, you told us that it was for the show. And the dad goes, ugh. And then there's this. And you can spend 3 hours watching it debating whether it's the kid or the dad that's farting. It's really, really great. And I just think there was a lot going on in the world and also a lot going on during that CNN satellite interview. So that, like, it just kind of slipped by us. It wasn't like the fart heard around the world. We need to go back.
Were there charges filed or pressed? Or did they do any? Did someone go to jail or get fined for that? Like, for wasting our time? Is that one of those things where there's no crime?
Yes, actually, they had to pay restitution. I think I looked it up on Wikipedia. I think they had to give a little bit of restitution. No, wait, did they?
Restitution.
No, I think I'm mixing something else up. Because I think CNN, you know.
I just high-fived Kumail.
You know what I picture happening in the parking lot of that whole event is the government coming up to a circus of news cameramen and producers and going like, anybody want to press charges? And they're like, no, we're good. we did it. Like what is the, you know, we got everything out of this we would have gotten if a baby had been in a balloon. That's what's for sale. Buy Snickers. Good night.
It's a stupid question to ask. How does a plane disappear in a world full of surveillance? A big ass plane full of human beings. How do they not fucking know?
I don't know. Let Rob Delaney talk about that.
What was your conspiracy theory earlier?
Okay, come on. No, but that was over drinks. Like is it? I don't know. Is it politically incorrect right now to be making bits about these people are gone, dead. These are human beings. It's in poor taste, right, to do bits.
I wouldn't call it a bit about the tragedy of these people dying. We're just, I don't know.
But my bit is specifically hint. Never mind. It was a sci-fi conceit. That's all. Everyone's thinking about it.
You were saying that as a fetishist of storytelling.
Over drinks, we were saying this.
But as a fetishist of story and story structure and character, that you can't help but project onto this.
Like a guy in goggles coming in the cockpit and going, listen, you have to take this plane down. There's a guy in E3 that's going to give birth to Hitler. New Hitler. Nosedive now. And that the whole, there was a, you know.
Yeah.
It's not funny.
People
died.
Well,
shame on you.
Because originally it wasn't New Hitler. It was the guy who was going to give birth to space AIDS.
I changed. I haven't even typed a word of this yet. All right. So I want to thank Greg and Charles for buying me a drink at the Drawing Room. They came here from San Jose. Everybody comes out. There's always a pilgrimage that comes out here. Hey, Greg, are you here?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Greg.
How you doing?
Good. Greg and Charles drove 5 hours from San Jose. I'm sure. So, who else drove further? Who drove further?
Here.
What?
San Francisco.
Was that San Francisco?
Yep.
Sacramento.
You guys. But now we get into what you drove here for, and those guys drove here for how it's made.
Anybody here from Malaysian Flight 441?
It's not. To me, it's not funny. To Jeff, it is. I want that on record for TMZ.
That's a different flight number. Is it right? Did I get it right? 370. The 370, that's not funny. Flight 441 landed safely in Beijing hours ago.
All right. Thank you, Greg and Charles, for buying me a drink at the Drawing Room before the show. Everybody that drove here tonight, sorry, but $10. What the fuck do you want? How about that, Fred Phelps? Let's do the our next segment, our regular annual segment, South by Southwest Breakdown with Camille Nanjiani.
Hello.
Yeah.
How's it going, guys?
It's going good. Sorry. I mean, we're so accustomed to you. The first thing you say is, can I just say this?
Oh, no. Can I just say, this is me. I'm Camille.
Hey, everybody.
I bet that's not what Fred Phelps' thing is, unfortunately. I'm sure he's just, his brain is gone. And so
why would they excommunicate him? Why wouldn't they deify him and put him under a glass?
Because he's probably crazy and shitting his pants or something.
But why would they excommunicate him? That's such a specific.
That's a specific. That's,
you know,
like,
what? This may all be based on some weird, this one thing that his one kid said on Facebook. And now it's been added to his Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah.
Because we don't actually know. I mean, yeah. I keep Googling Fred Phelps, excommunication.
Yeah.
And there's nothing. The only thing that's there is this continual reference to the fact that his kid said that.
Yeah. I will say, I've never been sexually attracted to a guy, but I will make out with a dude at his funeral.
Like, I thought you were totally going to say, I would fuck that. Fred Phelps.
I would. If he's up for it. I mean, I'll take that hit for everybody. What if he comes out before he dies? I mean, that would be pretty amazing.
What if
I mean,
that was it? That'd be so good.
Well, would it be the biggest shock in the world, or would it be like the third, fourth, eighth biggest shock in the history of? My brief Googling, he was a lawyer and he was a civil rights activist. I mean, like this guy.
He was
a Democrat.
He was a civil rights activist.
Something happened to this guy. something happens to everyone who decides that in addition to letting gay people just be alienated by virtue of being gay, that you actually have to go after them. Something has to happen to you to pick on gay people.
At funerals of like soldiers who've died, like that's such a long connection to make, because the connection is that wars are God's way of punishing homosexuality and our sins. So the people who go to war are, is that, what's the logic? Does anyone know what the logic is? Because he's not protesting funerals of gay people. He's protesting soldiers who've died in wars.
Some holdover. Yeah, it wasn't gay soldiers, right?
It wasn't gay soldiers. It's something like a war happens because gays. So if we go to, and it's weirdly, I think, like supporting the dead soldiers. Like, hey, if we didn't have gays, your son would still be alive.
Oh.
Like, it's some weird logic like that. Like,
I didn't know that. So, I always assumed it was.
Right. That's right, right? I mean, it's wrong, but it's right.
Somebody it's back, so wrong, it's right.
Somebody back there feels pretty strong that that's right.
Yeah. Feels right.
Feels right.
What a pitch meeting where he's like, listen, guys, I got an idea. You have to stay with me. Yeah. It's a long way to get there.
Go long.
Yeah, go long. Hold up both hands. Good luck.
I went down a rabbit hole today because the first thing that happens is the Twitter jokes. Wait, what's happening?
I might be wrong.
It's wrong. I have a really strong source right here.
Okay, well, what is it? Why does he?
Everyone else is here.
What is it?
It's because soldiers are fighting for this country, and this country is supporting gay people.
Oh, okay. Okay, so it's sort of similar. She said soldiers are supporting this country, and this country supports gay people. So,
right.
You're gay by association.
So it is anti the soldiers that are dying.
Yeah, they deserve to die because they support these gay folk in our country.
Wow.
Fag enabler, he says. Fag enabler.
Fag enablers? He calls soldiers fag enablers?
Yeah. So fag enabler is actually the name of my battle bot. And, I don't know if you guys remember when I was a contender in battle
bots. Well, right?
I never meant it to be pronounced that way.
Yeah, it's fag enabler.
It was Dr. Fag enabler.
Yeah. In the UK, they just thought it was a guy who sold cigarettes to minors.
I went down a brief rabbit hole. I think the internet is such a beautiful pudding of hatred and toxicity and juvenility and outrage and reflex and then these beautiful clouds and streaks of oh my God, we're all gonna be fine. Just like went down the rabbit hole of a lot of wonderful blog essays from gay people whose straight friends are, you know, absolutely justifiably taking the opportunity to go, yeah, burn in hell, you fucking fag hater, you know, and but who personally just want to take the time to say, you know, just more of the same. Not to cast aspersions, I appreciate the advocacy, I appreciate the support, but this is just an old senile man who was pushed to the forefront in the media because of an agenda that needs to be made conscious of. And to hate each other for anything is always the wrong answer.
I also understand, like, if you're gay and you're persecuted and there's a guy who's protesting soldiers' funerals because they're fag enablers, I mean, I can understand someone being really angry.
Everyone has permission to do it.
Yeah.
Nobody is going to punish you for doing it. So what do you do in that moment? Nobody is going to judge you for stabbing this guy in the face. So here's your knife.
What is he dying?
What are you going to do? I guess
I don't know the details, huh?
He got space AIDS.
Yeah. I was trying to think of what the joke would be. I'm like, what am I doing?
I couldn't think of the joke either.
A Sudoku puzzle on my chest.
It's hard. I was like,
do we know how he's dying? Is he dead? Is he hanging on?
He's super old. I think he's just dying because
the ravages of time.
The ravages of time. Yeah.
And space AIDS.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Enough about this asshole. If we talk about him a second longer than Harold Ramis, I'll fucking kill myself. Then the world has committed a crime.
Yeah. I wasn't here when you guys talked about Harold Ramis. That was, I had this weird thing. I do this podcast called The Indoor Kids with Emily, and I started talking about, oh, thank you. Harold Ramis, and I started crying, and I couldn't stop crying. And I figured out it was because, and I told the story there. Well, do we want to talk about Harold Ramis again?
Sure. No, tell. Yeah.
Okay. So this happened.
I want to see you cry.
No, I'm not gonna cry. Watch me not cry, motherfuckers. Already, it's hard. No, because obviously I loved Ghostbusters and stuff, but
he's already crying.
Yes, I'm cried out. Groundhog Day. I love that movie, and this is sort of a weird story, but stick with it because it's. She's okay now, but when Emily and I first started dating, she got really sick, and it was like this weird, mysterious thing. And we'd been only been dating a few months, and she was in a coma for 8 days. It's a crazy, yeah, it's sort of out of nowhere.
Did you hit her?
Huh? While she was in a coma? Then she's not learning her lesson.
Wow, that was a roller coaster of...
Yeah! And that's the story I wanted to tell. That's.
I hope somebody was recording that exchange.
Yeah,
we're back in Hollywood Squares. Like, new comedy golden age.
They want to move me to Center Square because of that exchange. They're like, we're getting Bruce Valanche out of there. So she got really sick, and it was crazy, and we'd only been dating a few months, and... her parents and I hung out for a while, and that's when I sort of told my parents that I wasn't going to marry the woman that they found for me, that it was going to be this woman who's in a coma, who's hopefully going to come out, and if she comes out, I'm going to marry her, and if she doesn't, well, then the world ends anyway. So, when she finally came out, and she was fine, and the first night I got to stay in the hospital with her, and she was up... I was allowed to bring in a laptop, and I was like, what movie do we want to watch? And she was like, Groundhog Day. And it was so profound because every day I'd been at the hospital all day, every day. So I sort of was living Groundhog Day. Like, it was the same day over and over. But I remember watching this movie with Emily, who's up now, and being like, oh, everything's going to be okay. So, you sort of connect to people because of the things they've done. And but that was like a very special thing for me. So when he sort of died, that really like hit me. Not hard, but in a way I was like, oh, that guy had a profound effect on both our lives in a way that he never really, he doesn't know, you know? He has no idea what that means. So.
Yeah, it was never really, it wasn't one of the people whose impact we acknowledge while they're alive.
Yeah.
I don't know what their deal is, but I know that the really important people are the people who unexpectedly, like, that blanket has slipped out from underneath us and we suddenly everything is disrupted.
Yeah.
And I know, I've confessed to this, I know this is all narcissism and all ego, but how else are you supposed to process someone else's death? But I'm repeating myself, but I'm walking down a sidewalk in Burbank and I'm just processing this and the way I do every celebrity death and like, what does this mean to me? Why was he important? Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden I'm just fucking weeping.
Yeah.
And it was definitely because this was a purveyor of, I mean, like Groundhog Day is, it should definitely be put in a canister and shot toward other planets because it's the best we can do in a modern civilization of creating a new there's creation myths, but then there's the part of mythology that just tells you like soothes you, like reminds you that everything's fucked and that you need to be who you are. And it's a story about God holding a man still until he can't stop, until he can't squirm anymore. And you just watch it happen. And it's what's amazing about that movie is that any hokier movie would have easily gotten away with ending the story with him just becoming a good guy to her and learning her favorite color and I've got ice cream on the windowsill. And in that movie, that's where shit really goes bad.
Yeah.
Because he's really become an asshole now. Yeah. Because it's one thing to rob a bank and it's one thing to eat all the M&Ms you want, but it's another thing to fucking fabricate the spark between one human and another, and then he leaves that rom-com world, and he just takes piano lessons, and he just catches the same cat out of the same tree, and blah blah blah. And it's at that point that that he actually has something with her. Anyways, all right. So
that scene where he's trying to save the homeless man from dying over and over—that's such a great moment. I mean, it's a fantastic, amazing. I mean, if aliens attack us and they want to kill us, we show them Groundhog Day and give them Nutella, and they'll be like, all right, you guys have done good.
There should be theologians who study that, who ask things like, does he save the homeless guy after a certain point? The story would indicate that he learned the lesson that that guy's just going to freeze to death and starve to death on the sidewalk, and you tried everything there, so you get a piano lesson and just do it. They don't dwell on that. It's a more uplifting movie than that. But those are also like you could, that's what I'm saying. Like, you could launch that movie to Mars, start a civilization based on it, and then young, new generation could say, well, did he save the homeless guy every time? And then you could go, well, you know, some people say he did, but other people. So you know what? If you've got a piano lesson, you need to learn piano. That's going to help more people.
I want to see a sequel to that movie where it's just him, like, dazzling people by making ice sculptures. And they're like, where did you find the time?
And there's a comic book series where time unfreezes at different times for him. And so there's, like, different Bill Murrays who are, like, champion ice sculptors.
Yeah. Or, like, what if it ended too early and he was, like, halfway good? So he's still trying to impress people? Like, that's pretty good, right? Yeah. I mean, I can't do the head right, but better than you can do.
All right. So how was South by Southwest? For you.
Oh, I had an awesome time.
Well, your head was everywhere.
Yeah, they really pushed that show.
What is it like to be in an airport
with the faces?
Moment when I feel the angriest at the government, when I feel the most put down by mainstream society, if my head was above the metal detectors, like I would explode.
You're right. It's Orwellian. It kind of feels like, well, it was these guys' idea. I get angry at them. It really does feel like.
Did it make you feel like taking your shoes off was? Did it mitigate, or did it make you feel like?
I know I had a moment where I felt I was in the wrong line. Like, I got into the pre-screening line and I wasn't pre-screened, and I had this whole thing because you'd want to be normal.
Where's my ID? It's right behind you, asshole.
You motherfucker, have you heard of Mike Judge? Okay, well, you should really look into his stuff. It's, I was telling you, they were also on cabs and stuff, those pictures, and we were all so excited, all five of us, and we were walking down the street, and this cab was parked there. So it's me, Martin Starr, TJ Miller, Zach Woods, and Thomas Middleditch, and all our faces were on this cab. This cab was parked there. And we were all walking by, and we were like, hey, can we get a picture in front of this? We just walked up to this guy. I was like, we're going to make this guy's day. Watch this. You have a horrible life driving a cab. Here's a little bit of goodness for you. So we walked up all arrogant, and we're like, hey, can we take a picture in front of this cab? Here's $5. And he said, no, and drove off. He left his parking spot to, like, not take a picture with us.
Because he wasn't a fan?
I don't know what the deal was. The other thing is, they're also in New York, and of course, this is the month where my parents are in Pakistan. So I'm still going to hear, like, hey, you should really go to med school, like, for the rest of my life.
Yeah. I mean, you detect a lace of the whole time you're in Austin, every time we've been in Austin, for whatever festival we've been there, it's a city of festivals. That place is the eternal. It's Austin is the guy in your circle of friends whose apartment is just wide open and everyone just hangs out there. And some people have been crashing there for 3 days and he's not that excited about it.
Yeah, I don't go to the other apartments around because that's fucking Texas. This is the cool apartment.
and you get to, you know, you're marveling at Austin and it's gorgeous there and it's everything. It feels like a city that's just designed to kind of host you. And then, you know, through the miracle of Twitter and stuff, I'm able to see Austin locals going like, you know, it's all right that you're here, but God damn this fucking thing.
I would be so angry because it really does turn over the city.
It was my first time there during the festival. I've been to Austin like a dozen or more times, and it's a bummer to be there because you like my thing is I just want to be able to get to a place I want to go eat at or see a show. And you can't move around there. It's so prohibitive.
The amount that I get pissed at the L.A. Marathon and please God forgive me, the Armenian Genocide parade.
Is that a real parade that
happens? Well, I mean, they block traffic a little bit, and then I get all huffed up. you know.
Like, this is the worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah.
Wait, exactly. What are you guys about again?
Like, why can't I cross Hollywood? I have rights.
Yeah. You people should be able to relate to this.
Yeah, think about it. Make the equation, for God's sakes. Get out of my way. That's what I'm saying. It's like LA has a couple of things that disrupt it. But San Francisco and Austin, holy jamoli. The thing that I want to be able to do, I wish I could, because we're in bad economic times. So for all we know, Austin is like, they shouldn't be feeling that way. They should be thinking, holy shit, we would be Detroit if we didn't have 800 strangers per square inch flooding our city every week. But I don't know, and they don't know, and no one can know. You'd have to create a parallel universe where they didn't create that kind of...
You'd have to do an It's a Wonderful Life with Austin.
With Austin as the protagonist standing on a bridge about to jump. And going like, I can't stand being the host of all these festivals anymore. But wait. I never saw the movie.
Have you but not seen it?
No.
I mean, you got it. That's the movie.
Yeah, I know. Well, there's these movies like Wizard of Oz and Gone with the Wind. And
you saw Wizard of Oz?
I don't think I've seen it all the way through. Piecemeal through every I know I could tell you from okay starts in black and white. She works on a farm. She's bummed out. She's because it's in black and white. She meets every character that you're gonna see as an animal. And then a tornado comes. She sings a song and a tornado comes. She sings a tornado song and the tornado makes everything go into color.
Do you remember how the tornado song goes?
Somewhere over the tornado.
Is that the song? Is that she sings?
Okay. Somewhere over the rainbow.
Like, tornado song. And then she lands. She lands on a witch. Now she's committed a crime before she even knows she does. These little people come up and they say, like, you killed the witch. And then another witch says, like, follow. There's no problem. I know how you can get out of here. Follow the yellow brick road. So she follows the yellow brick road. She meets, not necessarily in this order, a scarecrow, an Iron Man, and a... A lion.
That would be great if it was Iron Man.
Like, and she meets them all. They get attacked in no necessary order by trees, monkeys, and poppies. And then they go to the Emerald City. That's the meeting with the goddess. And they get there. And then they atone with the father, which is the fact that the Wizard of Oz is just a shithead and behind a curtain. Toto finds that out. And then somewhere along the line, they make the witch melt with water. I don't know if she comes into the Emerald City and is like, stop it! That part doesn't make any sense to me. But then in one of the most egregious violations of my personal cinematic narrative rules, she finds out she could have gone home any time by clicking her heels. And so she does. And then she wakes up does she wake up in black and white again?
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of a ripoff. But I guess how is she going to do it?
Do you remember what the Iron Man and the Lion and Scarecrow were searching for?
The Cowardly Lion wants a heart. So he has a song about wanting a heart.
Iron Man wants a heart.
Let him talk.
He has an arc reactor. He wants a heart.
Wait, okay.
Thank you very much.
You're right. Okay, so the Tin Man wants a heart.
Tin Man, yes.
He doesn't have a heart.
I associate the heart with courage. What the fuck does the lion want?
He has a
claws? I just want claws.
He literally gets a diploma at the end. Right?
Lion? It's just courage.
Or he gets a badge. Who gets the diploma?
Scarecrow. Brain.
Sloppy. So, like, heart is courage, is bravery, is like, passion. So, lump it together. Make one character out of three represent those. Sorry. But
Are you fixing a movie you haven't seen?
There's a reason I won't watch it. It looks sloppy from a distance.
That should be a fucking segment every episode. Dad fixes a movie he hasn't seen.
We'll go down the AFI 100.
Yeah. Exactly.
What's a major film that you haven't seen that you're like that you're embarrassed or that you're unrepentant about not having seen?
Wizard of Oz is a big one.
It's a Wonderful Life.
It's so forced on you. It took me until my mid-20s to start watching Woody Allen movies. Because when I was growing up, it was like every stand-up would come out and go, I'm Woody Allen. And I didn't understand that he was an artist and that he was that he was writing things. And
I also didn't
understand that he was a guy that was like, he was a nerd that was putting himself in movies. I just thought that God like made action figures that were famous and that this guy I was supposed to think was interesting because he had glasses and red hair. Like, I didn't, and then you have to shake that stuff. And like, it's a wonder, those holiday movies, like they're hard to swallow.
It's a Wonderful Life. You have to really cut yourself off from like the weight of it, but it, how everyone talks about it. But it's a good, I like that movie. Oh, yeah. It's a very schmaltzy, but this is before, you know.
I've seen big parts of it, I think. I mean, I know that, yeah, so the angel gets his wings when you ring the bell, and the Mr. Banks doesn't want the money in the potter, in the wheelchair. He finds out that if he wasn't around, it's just...
Oh, yeah,
Mr.
Potter needs a heart, and...
it sounds like its second act is a... sounds like a kind of... like kind of long, like okay, we
I
get it.
I love this segment.
How do you know how long the second
it sounds
act
like it's kind of long?
Because I've never heard like throughout 41 years of living in a world that keeps referencing that movie, what I've never heard in anyone and reference any structural flagstones that make a complete story. What it sounds like, this guy's gonna kill himself, and then an angel comes up and says, "Don't kill yourself." Why shouldn't I? I'll tell you why. Because if you did, things would be worse. And he's like, I don't believe you. Which is, it's just like one third the Christmas Carol, you know, or A Christmas Carol. And he takes him and he goes and shows him and goes like, look at this. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm dead and people noticed.
Except when we watch it now, Potterville's fucking awesome. Like the Potterville is like everyone's just too, like jitterbugging and like there's good music and like, it seems like you'd rather hang out.
You
Potterville.
Did ruin everything.
Yeah, but I like the part. And it's been a long time since I've seen it. I don't know the movie very well. I've only seen it a couple times over a long amount of years.
People are gasping, by the way.
His house is all windy, and the house that he bought that he got with his wife, and they had a family, and the house is shitty, and it's drafty, and it's falling apart, and he's going broke. And
there's a run on the bank.
And the little, what do you call it, a little ball, a little knoll thing or knob thing that comes off the end of the stairwell. And he starts yelling, and his daughter is sick.
When does he take a knob off the stairwell?
Yeah,
it just comes off.
It comes off when they first move in the house, and it's charming.
It's the straw.
The house is a fixer-upper. Like this is the symbol of that we have growing to do.
Right.
Then it never changes. The house just keeps being shitty, and it's getting shittier. And now his daughter, on Christmas Eve or whatever, has a cough and she's sick because it's so fucking cold in the house.
Oh, Jesus.
And he starts... the angel's proving to him how bad life is, would be, he's just getting angry at his family. And I forget if he goes back at this point. I don't know. But at one point, he just starts yelling at his family and he becomes like I didn't fucking ask for this shit. I don't fucking want to do this. I never wanted this. I always wanted something else. You guys made me do this shit. Like fuck you, fuck at me, like fuck everybody. And it's the symbol of that little piece of furniture breaking. And he raises his voice at his little sick daughter, Zazu or whatever her name is. Zazie, was it? Zuzu. And like that moment is like shit gets really dark and he just implodes. And that's when it starts to become not Frank Capra. It becomes really punk rock and dark. And then Capra puts this beautiful little bow on it at the end, which is like it's good stuff. Also, it's an America that never existed. You know, it's a fake sure. America. But
wasn't there something about a pharmacist that hit a kid so much he was deaf or something?
It hit him. He can't hear to one ear because he clapped.
Oh,
him.
Yeah,
he
that's
tried,
right.
He tried to save him from putting, like, he was senile or drunk or whatever, and he was going to poison an old lady.
Oh, yeah.
And so he smashes him over the ear, and he can't hear. He has a bad ear because of
it. Isn't
that.
There also a part where they, like, propose and there's, like, a fake moon out the window that they put up? You remember that? Is that right? Right? They propose. I remember.
Is that where you want the moon, Mary?
So you guys, as experts in this movie, we've all experienced the same amount of cinema. That's my point.
No, that movie moved me and touched me.
Prove it. No, I've got. Prove it with a rap. All right. No.
By the way, speaking of, can I say I told you this? That Dean Pelton rap is one of the funniest thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I watched it
I swear, at least 30 times. It's so funny. It's so good. The first time I watched it, I didn't even laugh. I just didn't breathe for a while. It's so great.
He's... Somebody online tempoed it and put it under a beat, and it's amazing. Aaron played it for me, and Don Diego wrote the and I wrote the lyrics overnight one night.
Don Diego, you have a Spanish gentleman working for you.
Is that just like your imaginary friend who does rewrites with you?
Hello, Dan.
I'm not alone. Don Diego is here.
Yeah. Don Diego.
Were you asleep at your writing office at night, and a figure emerged in the balcony?
He definitely. We always tease him about that.
Yeah, it's just Dan with a rose in his ear.
Don Diego.
But he kind of spat out a bunch of stuff, and in the original thing that he threw out, that it included the whole ending, which is that I didn't want to change. It's just like, Barack Obama is scared of me. And I was
Barack
like, well, okay,
Obama
we're gonna keep
is scared
that.
Scared of me.
But then we sat and kind of nitpicked. And then when I heard it set to the beat, it was like, oh, that's a good rap. It's a funny joke. It's great.
I love
it as much as.
I just love how quickly it goes south. He gets two lines out, and then it's like, what the fuck is going on?
Because he wants to do a freestyle rap. I love that character so much because he's like a children's book character. Like, to me, that's like the other high point of him is when he comes in and he's half man, half woman because he wants to say that. And then he has this breakdown and goes like, what am I doing? And it's like I've got to fucking like cool it. And he runs out. And then he comes back at the end of the episode and goes, you know what? I thought about it, and I had lunch with people who are interested in what makes me tick, and I had the best day of my life. Like he's like the pokey little puppy. Like he's so simultaneously like he represents. It's like we equate complexity with the opposite of innocence too much. We think that innocence means purity, and it doesn't. You could be the most complicated, most sexual, most labyrinthine person in the world, and you could still be innocent. You don't have to be a cotton ball that just has no substance to it. I think like, oh, that's that stuff. That won't hurt you. That's what innocence means. No, innocence means there's nothing that can hurt you here. This person wouldn't hurt you. He has a river that runs leagues deep underneath him, but he's innocent. And so he stumbles into these situations where he's like, I'm going to do a freestyle rap because you're late. I can't pay you this week. So I'm going to do I'm going to do this freestyle rap where you don't know what you're going to say next. And he starts rapping and he stumbles into the spirit of the street overtakes him and he becomes a vessel for black anger and disenfranchised youth and has to run out of the room dressed as a peanut bar. It really is the best show ever on TV. It's something else. Well, at least that moment, anyway. So, yeah, no, we all feel the same way in the writers' room. We like that. And Jim Rash needs whatever, like, he 50 takes of that because I kept being like, well, yeah, but the camera needs to be on you enough time that...
Is he doing that rap even when it's not his coverage? Was he, like, giving it his
he's
all?
He is, but, like, also the point of the rap is that it, like, escalates and escalates and escalates until he's, like, screaming. And so he's doing different takes from different angles, and I just kept... There are two moments... When I've almost killed a man on that set, that's one, and the other one is when Richard Erdman, the guy who plays Leonard, his first episode in season one, he was in a pool and he's treading water. You go through central casting and you order people like so much like off a menu. You go, I need an old guy that can swim. And you get Richard Erdman, who was in Gunsmoke and had his own show and was on Sid Caesar. And you go to his IMDb page sometime afterward and realize, I've been physically abusing television history. But in the meantime, I got an old guy that can swim, and he's swimming, and he's just supposed to be treading water in a pool, and Jeff Winger said something, and then he goes he says busted, but what was it? Jeff goes like, we're all crazy, not me. And then Jeff says, shut up, Leonard. And this is like this random character. Shut up, Leonard. I saw your art project, whatever. And it goes like, busted. And then he swims away. We're shooting coverage of Leonard, and he's just an old guy that can swim, and we're just making him swim forever. And I'm just like, he's not saying busted right. It's just like another take. And I went to the bathroom early on before I came back, and like we did like 50 more takes, and then eventually like Joe Russo, the director, said like he's gonna drown, and I think he got it while you were in the bathroom, like on take one, and I think that you've been drowning an old man
for no reason
the entire time. I think you're like an Egyptian pharaoh in a Mel Gibson movie about just the end of civilization.
But you know, once he drowns, nobody fucks up a take after that, you know?
Yeah, I look at the rest of the pool and I go, you see that?
Yeah, say busted right.
You see what craft gets you? You follow direction. And so it turned out absolutely he nailed it on the first take.
Oh,
and
no.
The rest of the 50 takes, he was just inhaling too much water to get his line right.
But he's an old man who can swim.
So, yeah, that's how I met Leonard. I was killing him. And that's how the second time I saw him, like, because we brought him back, and I was like, Jeff,
like, this time you're bungee jumping for this scene.
They're supposed to just walk by him, and he's supposed to go like Professor Slater says a zinger to Jeff, and then it's supposed to just land on Leonard going ooh, and he's just there, and he like they keep going past him, and he keeps going everything but who, and I go up to him, and he doesn't know who I am. Like I just go, hey, Richard, I am. Could this next take just go like ooh, and he goes. He just looked at me and just like fuck you, you know. I got from all of that like fuck you. I didn't know at the time still that he was
Sid Caesar and
yeah.
all that.
I just what I got was fuck you, and I was
did
like.
Did he know
Jesus
that you were
Christ.
The guy that nearly drowned him the time before?
I think he might have known that, but not that I created the show. I think he was just
so
like,
that's
this guy
the worst,
murders me.
That's the worst fraction of information to know about.
I know that face from one place, which is my death. I don't know, but then yeah. Anyways, who cares?
Great scene.
Yeah. Peanut bar wrap. Thanks. This is the place where you laugh at the peanut bar wrap. Watch Community on Thursdays on NBC. Then tune in to Dan Harmon's podcast to laugh at the peanut bar wrap.
Behind the scenes of the peanut bar wrap.
All right. So I think that I didn't talk to him about it. I got out of my car as he dropped me off at my house. Last time I saw him on Friday, and I said, see you Sunday? And he said, I think he said yes. And I literally haven't talked to him since. Was he in the green room?
He's here.
Who is he?
I have no idea who you're talking about.
Is Spencer back?
Yeah, he's here. Spencer!
Yeah!
Spencer!
Yes, it was just air.
That's a new catchphrase. Yeah.
I hope that was ironic enough.
I wasn't even thinking about the fact that since we last saw you, you were on Community. And like...
Yeah, it was.
Has there still... I asked you this already, but I haven't seen you in a couple days. Has there been any negative... This is what I keep bracing myself for. Like, I don't want you to be abraded and flapped. You're unflappable. I don't want you to be flapped by being on the show.
Yeah. In the East Coast viewing, there was some people talking shit about me, but it was cool because they were right. And
no, they weren't. They just had shitty weather.
They did. No, they were lame. What, they were being lame.
What was their beef?
I don't know. They called me Beardy McGee.
That's accurate and flattering.
I don't know. I wouldn't say so.
You don't like the Irish connotation in that, or what?
He is wearing green.
Yeah, I'm very strongly anti-Irish. I don't know. My voice sounds good.
You're so anti-Irish, you're wearing green the night before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, because that's why I'm anti-Irish, because I was always attacked in school for not fucking wearing green, because apparently it's okay to touch other people without their permission.
You get pinched or punched? Or
yeah, what? Just constantly. And half the time I'd be wearing green, and it's like, where do you get off? Apparently on touching other people without their permission.
Maybe that was their way of getting a little piece of you with, like, kind of surreptitiously. Like I want to touch him. This is the only angle I have.
I bet there were, like, 50 people last week being like, oh, I pinched that guy.
They probably were. Yeah, no, I was actually...
Wait, there's a tradition about getting pinched if you don't wear
green.
Yeah,
if you don't wear green.
Yeah. Green on
were you
St.
not
Patrick's Day.
Oh, my God. I'm so envious.
Yeah,
like,
no.
I was seriously just tortured in school.
It's horrible.
My angle was always that I have green eyes, and if that didn't work, I'd say, I'm wearing green underwear, and I'd play on their homophobia.
I would wear green underwear, like, half the time. Not on purpose. I just always had green underwear.
It's white when you put it on.
You should go to the doctor.
We should just hang out.
Spencer, are you excited about all the stuff from the episode?
Yeah, like, so there's too much to talk to you about. You're in this TV show. Who cares? So someone call you Beardy McGee. So then we went to Austin. We premiered this movie that, if it's not accurate to call you the star of the movie, it's certainly accurate to call you the hero of the movie. Sure. So what anything changed from that? Any dents in your Spencerness?
No, I don't know. It was weird seeing that movie. I had such a short beard back then. It was really...
No one called you Beardy McGee.
No, no, certainly not.
Beardy O'Rourke, at least.
Just O'Rourke. But it was really good seeing me on the movie. It was really... I was a lot more comfortable seeing myself in the movie than on TV. I don't know. Seeing myself on TV, I was like, no, this is wrong. Everything about this is
Was it that you were playing
terrible.
Someone else rather than being yourself? Was that the...
Probably had something to do with it, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
I mean, it's just weird, you guys.
None of us belong on TV. TV is a crazy place for crazy people. Like, those people are crazy. But I wrote a character for you that's like, oh, this guy's crazy. He shouldn't feel out of place. Should feel fine, so that you were protected.
Yeah, I felt protected by that role, definitely.
But the movie, on the heels of the movie, nothing's really changed. For me, everything's changed because I don't know how much of this you knew, but I, for the entire time that movie, like, there was a certain point where I was just living in grief. I was just multitasking a specific amount of my brain and my stomach for fucking grief, because I was seeing cuts of the movie and I was like, my life goes up and down. I make a rape joke. I don't make a rape joke. I make a Rick and Morty. I don't make a Rick and Morty. I'm constantly obsessed with how people think about me, but I don't want to ever be dishonest. I'm a narcissist, but I'm honest about that. Blibbity blubbity blue. I made this movie. I'm in it, and I'm watching cuts of it, and I'm like, there were dark, dark, dark days. And I don't know how much of that you were experiencing. If you were ever wondering, what the fuck is this cloud? Is this ever going to come over? Were you ever wondering, how am I going to be portrayed in this movie? Because you never saw anything of it.
I just tried not to think about it. I mean, it wasn't about me. Like, it was about you and who you are. So I wasn't worried that I'd, you know, be a weird part of it or some part of it that I wouldn't expect. I thought that what I was in was pretty good, and I came off as a really good guy, but I didn't expect to be in it. I probably didn't even expect to be in it as much as I was, so I wasn't really worried about it.
It had to be about you at a certain point. It was Aaron's idea, really, to... I remember at the pit of my despair going, I'm gonna fucking kill myself. Like, this movie is the nail in my self-destructive coffin. I've finally figured out a way to make everyone hate me because I don't change. There's nothing redeemable about me, et cetera, et cetera. And I was like venting all this to Aaron, and Aaron said, just tell Neil, because I don't have any control over the editorial content, but she was like, just tell Neil, who's struggling for a story in this movie, just tell him to make it about Spencer. Tell him that the story is Spencer and leave you alone. like let you be the asshole that you are, or the non-asshole that you are. Let you just be Dan Harmon in the background as the bedrock of the whole thing, and let anybody that goes through anything be the young guy that everybody likes that is undeniably going on a little journey. And that was the turning point of this thing not making me almost kill myself, because I did call Neil and give him Aaron's note, and the next cut I saw was like, holy shit, this is gonna work. I'm gonna get away with this. and so we premiered it at South by Southwest, and people like it, and the reviews are good and stuff.
I wish I'd seen it. I read the reviews; they're really good. I didn't want to read too much because I don't really have a sense of what the movie is like. But you guys liked how it turned out?
Yeah. It's almost like the equivalent. It's like, it's just weird. Like, it's like you go into a dark bar and just I don't know what the fuck it is. It's got details. I don't know if there are all the details that everybody wants or needs at any given time. But
for me, Spencer is like kind of the emergent hero in it. But for me, the movie is ostensibly about Dan and why the eternal question, why are we doing this? Why are we going out on tour? Why are we making this movie? The guy gets fired from his show, so he goes on the road. And they kept asking me in interviews, like, why are we doing this? Like, I don't know why we're doing this. I just think it's going to be fun. And then Spencer kind of goes through an actual journey. But for me, the movie is about you guys. It's about the fans that come to the show, because there's this, everybody is an individual, but it comes together as this kind of awesome organism of people. And that there's this straight to camera interviews with the Harmonians, and I've seen three cuts of it, and I cry every time. It's like it's not like boo hoo, but like it's just like some really beautiful kind of human moments in there. Like I think it's more about the people that come than about anybody up on the stage.
Yeah, they call that the money shot. I was doing a pun, cum joke. The capillaries in your cheeks dilate when fans are looking into the camera.
Talk about
and,
real for a while.
let's get Aaron McGathy out here. It was awesome.
Hello?
Did you like the movie, Aaron?
I did like the movie. I'm going to steal a line from a review. It's a movie about finding your people. And so I think for that reason, it's great.
It does what it sets out to do.
It does. I look like a real bummer in it, but it's great.
But that's not really true.
No.
You just don't look like the genius and muse and like person that's funnier than me and person that the documentary should be about, like, which is the truth.
Well, I thank you for your flattery.
When you focus the camera on me, my girlfriend becomes a person pushing a shopping cart, and at various points I take a shit on her to be funny. And so it's not an accurate portrayal of our relationship, but it is an accurate portrayal of what an asshole boyfriend I am.
I'm going to take what you're saying all the way to the bank and tell you guys that they cut out me figuring out almost the way to cure cancer. And at one point there were all these people in a soup line, and I stood in front of them and I started delivering this like comedic speech, and they all suddenly were full.
They went and got jobs.
Yeah.
There's hundreds and hundreds of hours of, I mean, it's 600 hours of footage. I saw cuts where all of a sudden you're just following Jeff, like, around the city, and he's alone, and he suddenly explains why he always, every time the bus stops, breaks off and goes to be by himself and reads a book, and then he starts talking about his mother, and, you know, that's all gone. Like, Jeff's just a guy in a suit in the movie.
Jeff, I wanted to tell you this last week. I took a trip by myself to Palm Springs, and I really was trying to channel you, when I was walking out in the city, I took with me a book, and I went to a Mexican restaurant, and I'm like, I'm just like, Jeff Davis just going to read this book. I got salsa all over my book.
That doesn't surprise me a bit, because I've seen you around salsa. We were in San Francisco a couple years ago, and
I've seen you on salsa is a great name for this episode.
We called Aaron the salsa monster because there was a salsa bar in the Mission at this burrito place, and we were all dead. We were just drinking all day long. It was the last day of our trip. We extended our stay another day. We all went to we all got drunk and high and went to this burrito place, and there was a salsa bar. It was not, you know, those little small plastic ramekins they give you to put salsa in. This one had like quarter pound like tubs, like big ones that you could like you get olives at like in like at Gelson or something like that. And you kept going to the bar and getting more salsa.
That was upsetting children. Like, that's not an exaggeration. Children that were near the bar.
She kept going back, I got to get more salsa, because she was out of salsa. The reason why you were out of salsa is because none of it was in your mouth or on the food. It was on the floor, in your lap, on my shoe, on the table. I was like, at one point I was like, maybe you don't actually like salsa.
The end of my Palm Springs Jeff Davis trip was that, like, I got salsa all over my book. And I had two margaritas, and I went back to my car, and I took a two-hour nap in my car on the street in Palm Springs.
That's exactly how
I
do
it. And it was like a vision quest where I was going to find myself, and I found myself drunk in a car.
So what were you hoping that would happen if you successfully channeled me? That'd be grand.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. What does happen to Jeff in those moments between
emotional
dimensions?
Emotional armor?
Do you go and rejoin the Adjustment Bureau and just... You have friends between dimensions, or you?
Really quick about that.
I'm gonna go read Moby Dick over a shot of Fernet Branca down the street. Okay, Jeff. Jeez, who's that guy? I think he's kidding. Once upon a time, and he goes through a portal, and there's just other guys in suits that are pretending to read Moby Dick.
Yeah. Sounds like Wings of Desire. Have you seen that movie?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
A fucking great movie.
I love that movie.
You just
Dan,
fixing
Dan
stuff.
What's your feelings about Wings of Desire?
I don't even know what that is.
It was remade into an American movie starring Nicolas Cage called City of Angels.
Yeah.
And it's these angels who like just sort of
Meg
go
Ryan
around.
And...
Yeah, that's what the movie is. But there's a great scene where they're like a guy like... So these angels just sort of go around the city unseen, Berlin, and like sort of...
Yeah, and Peter Falk... Spoiler? Is that bad to say with Peter Falk, isn't this?
It is a spoiler. Yeah,
yeah, like Peter Falk is in it, plays himself, and it's this awesome.
Oh yeah, he plays
it's
himself.
What's his name? It's
Bruno Ganz.
The director, the German director,
Wim Wenders.
Wim Wenders. It's a beautiful, wonderful movie.
It's an amazing movie.
Yeah, but my favorite thing on the tour, like the director Neil kept saying, like Jeff, like we need a shot of you, like. I want to know what you do when you go away, because we would hit town and towns that were cool, like New York, or I mean, most of the towns we went to are big cities and cool places to go. And I just kind of like to go on my own, grab a book, and just kind of bone out, look on Yelp, and find a like piece of pizza or something like that, or a nice something to eat. And just spend a moment like alone doing that. And he kept trying to follow me around. I just get these calls from Neil Berkeley. It's like, Jeff, where are you right now? I was like, I'm in a subway in New York, going to the city, like from Brooklyn. Can I send cameras? Like, no, because we won't be able to shoot where I want to go. Like, you won't be able to clear cameras at the place I'm going to. So in Chicago, we finally did. He's like, Jeff, we need to find out. I'm just out of curiosity. What do you do when you go off into the night on your own? And so I said, I'm going to go to this place or that place. If you can clear a camera there.
What were the places?
Butt nuts. with a Z.
And the
butt nuts?
And the manhole.
I used to live by the manhole.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah. Well, that's my second favorite name of a gay bar. My favorite one is the White Swallow.
White Swallow, baby. The White Swallow.
White Swallow's great.
San Francisco's White Swallow.
Jackhammer was there, too. I liked the Jackhammer. I did a show at Jackhammer once, and the entire time, porn was playing behind
it me. Seems like the goal of naming these places is if you're a straight guy wandering in,
yeah,
they want you to get two drinks in before you realize...
Manhole!
What it is.
Fuck! So many clues.
It was right under my nose. Oh, shit, it's right under my nose. Yeah.
Which services the guys that are also like, I didn't know, yeah, but let's hang out here because we were already here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it's still here in LA, but it used to be in Silver Lake, and it might be a chain, I don't know, but there was one in Silver Lake, I think it's gone now, called Rough Trade. That's not bearing the lead.
That sounds like a jean store.
Yeah, leather shop.
Or a saloon in Gunsmoke.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, here's the proprietor of Rough Trade, Mitch Hurwitz!
Oh, wow.
Well, I went into Rough Trade, sucked a million dicks. Went into Rough Trade, there were zero chicks. I went into Rough
Trade. All right. What a life. Oh, Kumail just got bounced. Okay.
No, Kumail's retrieving another microphone.
Whoa, oh, okay. Mic
the,
is hot.
The line at the White Swallow tonight, has anyone been down there?
Yes.
So I'm sorry I'm late. What I missed? Catch me up. Really quickly.
South by Southwest went great. Okay. And,
do you want to, can they replay it? Do you want to just replay the...
Yeah, yeah. Can we do a playback for Mitch? Honestly, he's an important guy.
Yeah, did it go great?
You want to hear my notes? Because I take a couple notes every show. I have, I'll fill you in. 3/16/14, post South by Southwest. Dr. Fred Phelps is dying? Balloon
Boy. Oh, that sounds like a winner.
Balloon Boy. Fag Enabler, Don Diego.
This needs to be a new segment. Here.
And Spencer.
The show
is,
so far.
Spencer is Beardy McGee. And
right.
Those are all the notes I've taken so far. So, if you ever
Fag
see
Enabler,
me,
Don Diego, putting in your eye.
If you ever see me taking a note, I'm writing down. Aaron, you're going to have a garage sale for your charity thing, right?
Yeah. Jeff. My charity, thank you. It's not my charity. It's A26LA, which is a great charity. You may have noticed that during Dungeons & Dragons, Jeff is always taking notes in different notebooks. This Sunday, from 11 a.m. to 6 a.m. here in the space, we're having a garage sale, which will mostly be dance stuff and stuff from all of us sitting around this room. I don't know why. Obviously, it's not going to be floating.
It will be following the laws of physics.
It will. So you won't be creeped out. There's also going to be a little bake sale. But at for you listeners who can't, I don't know why I'm so nervous explaining this. My face is like red hot.
Because inner city children will die if you do.
That's the thing. Is if we don't raise a certain amount of money, Mitch Hurwitz's kids are going to die.
They're not going to die, but they're not going to feel good. They're going to feel they're going to be very, very sickly. Just a step up from what they are now.
There we go.
Which is dead?
No, they're extremely sickly.
Okay.
To
get better.
So it'll be all sorts of garage sale things.
Mitch keeps his kids in an igloo cooler at home.
He turns the temperature up as each item is sold.
Which preserves their life, right?
Yeah.
They call me the smooth face dad. Which I think is that from True Detective? I don't know. I didn't
smooth
know the reference.
Face?
I don't
no,
know the reference.
That's a spaghetti face.
Spaghetti face. That's what it is.
Yeah, opposite of smooth face.
Of the right
can we, I kind of hope that we can do another because I just finished. But we'll get back there. And I watched all of and really liked True Detective.
Right? Yeah. That's it.
Well, I think that's what they've been waiting to hear over at
maybe,
HBO. Yeah,
maybe we could do another little Pakistana Hay and
Pakistana Hay.
I was Pakistana.
So really
hay.
Quick. At for those
were
you
confused about which one of us was
no, I
Pakistana Hay?
Pakistana Hay. All right, sorry, Aaron. Go ahead.
It's okay. For those of you who can't come from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Pacific time, through a cool website called Kogo. It's kogo.tv. We'll be streaming a
K-O?
C-O-G-O. We'll be streaming a QVC-style show with Dan and guest co-hosts selling things via that. And it's not going to be an auction. It'll be like, here's Dan's book. Because I found a few extra copies of You'll Be Perfect When You're Dead. Only a few, but Dan will be hawking those via the QVC thing. And another thing that we'll be selling will be Jeff's notes for D&D. And then also...
Where I write down such words as stubnorts. And that might be the whole entry for that show.
Yeah. And all the money goes to A26LA.
Every cent goes to A26LA.
And it's like a kids' education thing, right?
They're I
like
don't know tutor. What it is.
They're trying to make
Pretty
space
cool.
aids.
No, it's great. It's an organization that supports kids learning how to write. So it's very appropriate
yeah.
for this show.
I don't know enough about it, but it sounds like the thing that I've always thought in my head needs to. that I would, the charity that I would be interested in, which is the idea that kids need to.
It started by I forget his name, Heartbreaking Worker, David Eggers.
It's his charity, and yeah.
So this is, you know, I've got Stop Writing Kids. I don't know if that's
well,
a
that's
different.
Well,
that's just
it's
about
a different
how the
message,
business
but
is
we
changing.
Can still team up.
Yeah, it seems so anti what you guys are trying to do, though.
I just read in Defamer that we're doing a secret project together, and I think that should be it.
Yeah, Stop Writing Kids.
Let's start writing kids together.
So your charity is just like telling kids, like, really? This is what you want to do?
Yeah, it is. It's
where's the story structure, Flagstones?
Yeah, and it's about how the spec script is really dead. And, you're not going to get a job.
It's just
from
showing
it.
Kids and show yeah. You show them like 16 millimeter films of like of writers dying alone.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It'll be worth coming by. Also, original art by Jeff and Dan and myself. I don't know, Jeff, if you remember, but when we were first hanging out, we got drunk and painted some things. We'll be selling those.
All right.
Sounds great.
Wait.
I was drunk?
I'll double check with Spencer, but also old character sheets and lots of stuff. So
there could be Spencer stuff for sale. Anybody else got anything to talk about?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind talking about stamps.com. You know, it's such a pain in the neck when you have to bring the mail.
You have to go to
found this crazy great site.
How does it work?
Wait, you have to go to the post office? Because I'm sick of doing that.
Look, all the post offices are turning into steakhouses, right?
Right? Who's with me? This guy knows what I'm talking about.
How am I going to weigh my postage?
Well, that's the thing. They come to your house. I don't know.
I fast forward to the first 10 minutes of Mark Maron's podcast, so I don't know the specifics
of
it.
Part,
Kevin Pollak does stamps.com, too.
Yeah.
I remember I had to sit through a lot of stamps.com.
Yeah, you know what this podcast doesn't do? It doesn't do advertisement. This podcast makes zero money.
We used to do Nike ads
charity.
A lot.
Yeah.
We're definitely open to it. I just don't want any of these stamps.com assholes coming around.
I want Mountain Dew Kickstarter or some shit.
I want Toyota.
You know what it should be? You know what it should be? Here's the angle. In South by Southwest, I learned a lot about marketing because people drive you around in cars that were like Chevy just sponsoring like free rides. So you get in their car and they kind of required to kind of give you a pitch about their car. And I was sat in a car with these gals that are Mountain Dew marketing people. Spencer, you're a big Mountain Dew guy.
Yeah, I'm wearing a Mountain Dew shirt right now.
Oh, just see? No shit. See, like Spencer should do a Mountain Dew piece every like once in a while.
I think he just
his
did.
His beard looks like an upside down mountain.
It's true.
Like a reflection in Mountain Dew of a mountain. That's what your beard looks like.
It tastes like that too.
Spencer, I mean, let's just do. I mean, not to put you in the spot, but you're an improviser. You're a dungeon master extraordinaire and extreme. I think, you know, and Mountain Dew is an extreme drink.
Oh, yeah.
Could we maybe hear a Mountain Dew spot? Just kind of riff one for us right now?
Should it be like a weird D&D?
Yeah.
Crumble climbing out of the pits of Skaldor. Your thirst, it needs quenching. As you rise to the top, there's a vicious ogre. The kind of ogre that doesn't just take traditional hydration to defeat, but the electrolyte caffeine-infused fusion of Mountain Dew Code Red. Code Red invite...
I don't know.
Yes. Yes.
I would say if we could go back, the ogre's name should be Thirst, right?
Oh, or, fuck.
I mean, hey, like, whoa, if we're going to write this thing.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah, it'll be Citizen Kane, but in the meantime.
I'm trying to make money. I want to make money.
May I request that Spencer does an ad for the Sunday's charity garage sale?
Well, I was going to say, but first you might want to do an anti-Mountain Dew ad, you know what I mean? So that they don't just feel like they got free publicity.
So they can know what will unleash.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
It's valuable.
Give Mountain Dew a taste of what they'll get if they don't sponsor
us. We'll be happy to drop one of the Mountain Dew ads if you guys want to play ball.
Yeah, this is what it looks like if you're on our site. Yeah. This is what it looks like if you're not.
Let them know that you can bring bring the sunshine, you can also bring the rain.
Bring the rain.
Bring the rain, Spencer. Yeah.
Maybe an upbeat piece for that.
I don't even know what an anti-Mountain Dew commercial is.
Climbing up the pits of Skaldor. You need to slake your thirst, but with something that's not gonna shrink your testicles. Where else can you turn but Sierra Mist?
Nice.
All right. Great.
Now you're covered.
All right. You hear us, Mountain Dew? I'm sure
you've been warned.
And now to potentially bring the room down, can we hear an ad for 826 LA's Harmontown charity sale?
All right, yes. Give us an ominous D&D advertisement for 826.
Climbing out of the pits of extra money you have lying around, you enter a lair full of knickknacks thrown aside by people more famous than yourself. But can you truly grasp some of their glory and fame just by owning some of their trinkets and items? Yes. Give me your money.
All right.
And if you could do an anti one of those, too, that way we're...
just to balance it out, yeah.
Now, just to kind of even things out, as we've been doing with you, Spencer, Mitch, I want you to do an ad for stamps.com, but as Robin Williams.
I really don't know how this idea that I do Robin Williams started.
Oh, you want to lick something? But it only costs 15 cents. It's a pretty nasty prostitute.
I say power and brimstone.
Snapshot.
All right. Okay. Boy, we're on a roll.
God damn it. This is becoming a cavalcade of stars.
Cavalcade of ads.
I mean, it seems almost incongruous to go into it, but Spencer, shall we dispense some character sheets and maybe play some D&D for the good people?
Yeah. We haven't discussed this. You're back, so does you being back mean that you want to play a little chapter of D&D?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, all right.
I don't know what anything means.
We played some at the Harmontown one.
We were in South by Southwest, Dave.
Well, yeah, we did.
That was for the locals.
Yeah.
They don't know what's happening. And just assume the same Harmontown.
Do you feel refreshed from your hiatus?
Yeah, I mean, I've never DM'd a game that many sessions without taking a break before. So
it was starting to show.
Oh no, I know.
No, I'm kidding. I don't. It all seems
well, you're
exactly the same.
Absolutely right.
Me.
I'll be the first.
Which
to
is
admit.
Worse?
It's cool. It's cool, Mitch. I respect your opinion as a professional, so.
I'll hand out the sheets and.
I don't get why that was a joke.
Oh, it's funny. I don't know. Sometimes some things don't have to be jokes to be funny. Believe me, my house payments are dependent on it.
What?
Well, I just thought Dan was going to go into a monologue about paying house payments with bad jokes.
It just seems like it's about Mountain Dew now.
Tricking people into thinking you have insight. Your mansion gets bigger and bigger. You invested in a cartoon studio, which will be your undoing. All right. That's Quark.
Did you really?
Starburns.
In
Burbank.
In Burbank.
Yeah.
Is Starburns doing well now? Rick and Morty's got to be bringing in some money.
Here's Chris DeBerg's character sheet.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we're doing well. We're doing fine.
What is Mitch still playing the Avenger or what's?
Yeah, I guess Mitch should reprise his role as my Falcon.
Yeah, I'll that's great because then I just kind of hang out and just kind of carve on your shoulder. Yeah.
You soar over me.
Yeah.
Cast a shadow on me. Just let me look up to you.
It works on so many levels.
All right.
So, all right.
Are we good to go? Are we poised?
Sure.
Spencer, I'm going to go. I'm going to go David Bowie Labyrinth hallucination theme on you. I think it's just shake it up a bit.
All right. Last time on Harmontown. after being released from skeleton bondage and finding the Marsh Minotaur, our heroes began to plot their escape. Together with the Minotaur's aid, the gang trekked back to the hole from which they fell, and using his teleportation cape, Sharpie quickly found himself topside. The rest of the adventurers weren't so lucky, and found they had to climb up Meredith the Minotaur's crazy, ridiculous ladder. As they ascended, they were beset by their greatest fears: pumas, long-term relationships, and not having the appropriate crafts. Mulrain fell from the ladder in terror, but eventually the gang faced their fears and climbed to freedom. And then they all gathered around a fire while Sharpie sang an old dwarven spiritual. But what would they do now in the harsh, unforgiving, frozen wastelands of the north? And what of their skull curses? Let's find out this time, hopefully, on an all-new episode of Stuff Thing Happened, Harmontown.
With a soundtrack that's getting a little Cagney and Lacey right there at the end. Just kind of a little, you know what I mean?
That Cagney and Lacey part kicked in right at the right time, too.
Yeah. Spencer has an innate sense of that kind of stuff.
I want to make a bit about how I want Spencer to be at my bedside recapping my blackout drunks, but I know I probably made that bit during some blackout drunk at some point.
And, you know, he's been doing it for like 3 years.
Yeah.
You really don't remember that. You do not remember that.
Every night. So Spencer, skull curses?
I don't know. I think I called him Skull Curses the last time I did an intro. But I remember when you were under court, and then you were like, you gotta kill the Marsh Minotaur. And then you were like, what if we don't? And then they were like, you're gonna fucking die.
All right, gotcha.
Yeah. All right, so we did it kind of.
All right, so are we with Meredith the Minotaur right now?
Yeah, and you're up. You're finally above ground again in the frozen wastelands of the north. You're around this campfire, you know? You're digging it. You're kind of enjoying having climbed up this ridiculously tall ladder. She starts pulling the ladder out of the hole and then is like looking around the ice trying to figure out where you guys are.
And we put I take my compatriots aside while Marsh Minotaur, what's her name?
Meredith. Yeah.
Well, she handles her ladder and I go, timers on us, didn't they? Wasn't there some kind of ticking clock? Like they know if the Minotaur gets killed or not.
But now she's our friend. We can't just kill her, can we?
Why don't we take her back and be like, hey, she's cool. Maybe that they'll understand, right? Don't you think so?
Well, I don't know if you've met Sharpie before, but yeah, he's not good with authority.
No, but you're okay with Meredith.
Better to do that than kill.
I don't know why she gave us this shitty ladder.
It was a bad ladder, but it got us up out of the hole.
It's the best ladder she has.
Am I still taking puma damage, or am I healed up now?
No, you haven't healed. You've taken, 20 damage in puma damage.
Is my dick still cut off and in a pit somewhere?
Yeah, well, it's in the very pit you just climbed out of.
Shit, my dick was down there? Hey, can I use the ladder real quick?
Guys, we really are we're tight on time.
Okay.
Absolutely need it?
Yeah. Do you need yours? Well, you're a falcon.
He's a falcon. Don't,
you know.
I feel like, okay, how about this? I'm just going to run down. Can I? I just want my deck back.
We're in such a hurry.
Do I still have my old one?
Your what?
I mean, I changed sexes. Do I still have my old dick?
No.
Okay.
The extra parts don't just
I know
fall.
We're in a hurry. And
we're
there's
in
a
such
timer.
A hurry. But I wonder, maybe somebody will have some power that regenerates dicks.
Oh, we'll get you a magic dick. Don't worry about it.
I don't want a magic dick. I want my dick. I know how to work magic with it. All right. Fine. But can we promise once we're done we'll come back and grab my dick?
I don't think we can promise that.
If only we had a being that could fly down and grab
it. We could send Falcon Avenger down after the dick.
That's so funny because I just went down there and there was this kind of thick but short worm. Oh my God.
Was it circumcised?
It was
worm?
Yes.
That's my dick!
I'm so sorry.
What did you do with it?
Do birds do with worms?
No. Oh my God, were you the early bird? Did you get my morning wood?
The good news is it was fine when I vomited into my children's mouths.
Avenger, you have children?
Yeah.
Okay. Brother,
yeah.
Bearing the lead, let's focus on.
I mean, we've just never had a chance to talk about our personal lives.
I know. I want to all the time, and I feel like I.
Jacob is 11.
Okay, did he eat my dick? The 11-year-old?
He re-swallowed.
Okay. What could. Just keep an eye out on their stool.
By the way, he wants to write.
Really?
Jacob wants to write.
Well, did you sign him up?
He wrote a community. He wrote a spec community. I didn't think it was very good, but would you mind reading it?
Absolutely.
Great.
No problem.
Great.
It was like a season four spec.
Yeah, it was heavy on Jonathan Banks. What season was that?
I don't know. This one.
Oh, it's this one.
Yep.
Okay, so he's watching them, I guess.
All right, so we're leaving the dick.
At this point, really, the dick has been, in
game time, I think the dick's been severed so long that
it does seem
reattachment.
Like
you're thinking like a modern person, like my Falcon says, it's. You have more chance of growing magically a new dick than you do of like surgically doing anything with that.
Yeah. I have a backpack and a sewing kit.
But I don't have the dick.
No, I know, but I'm just saying.
If you guys want to go back down that magic ladder.
No, but he said he... No,
it's lousy
with
pumice.
There's no dick. There's no dick.
I go up to Meredith and I say, Meredith, look, here's the deal. We were there was a contract out on your life basically, and we're supposed to kill you, but you saved our lives more or less. You got us out of the pit. We're not going to do that. We're going to take you back to the people. And I mean, is that the way to do this?
Well, we also have. What did they do? They cast a spell on us or something?
On our souls, yeah. On our very souls.
If you're not dead within a certain period of time, like we basically die. We're fine with that because I fucking hate authority. Like I would rather die than do anything that these assholes want me to do. But I'm just wondering if you can help us think of any solution to this. All right, terrific. Of all the people to be a hero for,
Eric, on your souls.
Yeah. That's like a timer.
I don't know, man. You'd have to, deal with someone crazy magic to try and knock that off.
Are you crazy magic?
No.
But you know somebody.
No.
Yeah, you do.
I just know that there's magic that exists and sounds like you got magicked and other magics can unmagic.
Meredith's right. Okay, we got to get these spell bombs diffused from us before the deadline.
Aren't you a magician? Don't you have any spells that can do this?
Yeah, I cast Charmed Squirrel. I'll be the first to admit, I'm just, I'm kind of new at this.
Out. He's open miking.
What about the Tarragon? aren't we still dealing with, we have to go to Paradise and find the Tarragon of Virtue to lift Krista Berg's spell, too?
That sounds right to me.
I've got a couple things going on.
Yeah,
right
but
now.
One of those is just getting lower
can,
on the
can
totem
we use,
pole.
Can I mean, we use
we
Meredith?
We are not going to be able to do all of these. We can't.
Meredith, do you know where Paradise is? Can we use ladder and get us to Paradise?
Well, if we found it, we could probably get up there with the ladder, yeah. But I don't know where it is.
God damn it.
For Christ's sake.
It floats around.
Does it exist? It's on this physical plane? But
yes.
Above us?
Yes.
We just have to find it?
Yes.
Okay, what kind of creatures do business with them? They must have imports and exports.
I don't know. I guess people probably live there. You've heard of them.
Can we send Avenger to go fly around and do some recon for us?
I mean, I could just check
Avenger!
Out. Yeah.
Go up in the air, fly around until you bump into a paradise.
I'm going to go look for it, and again, I won't be able to pick up thing.
I don't mean to beat a dead dick,
but if you see one. I can't do it, because now they want me to do this thing where I fly around, and I gotta go.
All right, in your travels, if you happen to see one, just grab it.
We're going to get you such a nice magic dick, you're not going to miss
it. I don't want a nice magic dick, I just want my dick.
We're really in a big hurry. I'll tell you, if you ever do want to save time, there's this thing called stamps.com. I just want to really quickly just go for it one more time.
Sending letters is getting faster and faster.
All right, so I fly up. I have no sheet or anything, but I just fly up, and I'm communicating with one of these earthbound creatures.
Yeah. Me.
Yeah.
Your friend.
Whoa, what is that? I think I saw...
Whoa!
What the heck is this thing?
Is it a dick?
Paradise. You're looking for paradise.
It's like a.
It's almost like a really nice condo development. Paradise Gardens, it says, but that could that be it?
Yeah.
They have a 24-hour health club.
Yeah, so you see that. You with your hawk eyes. That's it's just floating in midair, apparently. You see that, and then you feel like you should return and report what you saw.
Guys, yeah. My hawk says he saw a city that could be paradise, but he fucks around a lot. Like could be a bit, too. I can't tell.
It's not a bit. No, it's not a bit. But it does look like a condo development.
How high off the ground is it?
What?
You know, I can do it in wing flaps. It's like 28. I don't even know. Like 2,800 wing flaps. What is good. That? What does that even translate into?
Spencer, how high is that?
You look to 28 wing flaps or whatever high, and you see nothing. You wonder what the natural landscape and environment and temperature normally is for a hawk. It's probably not freezing.
Oh, so it's not crazy cold high. There. Is
or he's nuts because
he's crazy
cold.
High.
Or there was a headwind.
Or there's a headwind.
Have you ever flown? I mean, do you know anything about it?
No.
How many flaps do you think? But I would say, all right, if you want a number, I would say it's about 200 feet.
Guys,
250.
My hawk has lost it. We gotta just traipse across this fucking tundra until we either die or come to a place where somebody can help us find paradise.
Yeah.
What a terrible...
Is Coco nearby?
Coco's here.
I guess that's how I call her now. I jump on Coco and I ride off trying to scout.
All right. Well.
In what direction?
All.
So just like a rapid, slowly increasing circle, like a spiral.
Seems inefficient, but go for it. Oh, there she is. Oh, there she is. There she is. Oh, there she is.
Say, away,
she's a little farther now.
Uh-huh.
Away
not much farther each time.
Away from the hole.
Mm-hmm.
The way I live my life. Away from the hole, towards, like... Don't
just
ask what, just think about it. The place where I would think the most tarragon would be. Maybe, like, the greenest
tarragon?
Spot. North. Northeast.
Oh.
Northeast.
You head northeast for some time. You don't really see anything until you might see something. Yeah. Until you happen upon a brown sack.
He should take that. You should take that.
You found a brown
sorry,
sack.
Sorry, I was distracted by Adam Goldberg's yes. ringer, which was his mom saying, "You're okay, you're doing
it." Yeah, Adam Goldberg's ringtone is an older woman's voice saying, "Just tell him you're doing the best you can.
Stay true to yourself.
If they don't like you, then they shouldn't have been your friends in the first place."
I don't think Adam needs to be told to be true to himself. If anything, he's got that down.
Exactly.
I like
so put
how
it
my
on
mom's
vibrate.
Quoted as Jewish.
I'm sorry. I find a brown sack.
Yep.
Brown sack.
And
you see it from your horse. It's one of the only things that's anywhere in the snow.
Okay. I dismount. I give Coco's mane a very quick brush just to let her know that I still have her in mind. And I approach the sack and I inspect it.
It looks like it has writing on it. It does have writing on it. It's written in Gnomish, though.
Can it says Mountain Dew, if you guys are...
Do you read Gnomish?
How we pay the bills, guys.
I read Elvish.
Okay, so you can't read it. It's some Gnomish letters that you can't understand. But it's definitely a sack.
Okay. I'm
a gnome.
I pick up the sack. I put it on Coco. And I return to the party.
That happens.
So anyways, that's how you tie a rope.
10 cc's. I thought you said Tennessee.
Quark.
Huh? Yeah.
Oh.
I need.
I was just finishing my famous Dr. Tennessee joke.
You're intimate with sacks. You're intimate with sacks, right?
Ooh. I recognize the writing on that as Gnomish.
I thought
Who's
Jeff? Who's Jeff, motherfucker?
Yeah, you Quark. I'm a literate. I can't read my own culture.
I guess not.
Shit.
Oh shit.
Do you know, like, are you in touch with anybody you could talk to? We flash back to Quark as a little kid. Quidditch's not going to get me anything.
When did we establish that he was illiterate?
It's actually not. It's not on there anymore. My old character sheet. I am.
Oh yeah, that's right. Because in Pathfinder barbarians aren't illiterate.
Does he admit
so,
to
it? Yeah, you're good now because of Pathfinder rules.
What? We changed books. I learned how to read.
Yeah. That's how it goes. Yeah, so you can read it.
It's like a fucking Keanu in Matrix. That's how you learn how to read. Like, oh, I can read now.
Like okay. Keanu Reeves can read?
Are you cool with that, sir?
Never heard anyone say that.
That's pretty amazing knowledge that you remember that my character
seems like that should be rewarded more than us.
Yeah.
No, I got it. It's Spencer's World.
This guy knows.
It's Spencer's World. You're just remembering every tiny moment of it.
I pick up the bag and go, guys, I can't read. And I look at it and go, whoa.
I know Gnomish.
Sound it out.
Huh?
Sound it out.
It says Bill Mardigans. Apparently, it belongs to a guy named Bill Mardigan. Or maybe it's the name of like a Irish pub.
No, can you tell me where he abides?
Huh?
Kevin Rooney always used to do that bit about him. He'd be in Shakespeare or something, you know.
Can you tell me where the solicitor abides?
That's Bill and Ted. Yeah.
Okay,
Quark, you recognize Bill Mardigan's as a gnomish name. You know, you're not in touch with your gnomish roots, so you don't really know what it is, but it definitely rings a bell in your vernacular.
I open the sack.
You open the sack and out pours golden light. Whoa. That's all you can see is golden light.
I bend backward at the hip, like kind of like dodging the light.
That happens. That happens. You guys see golden light spill out.
By the way, nobody does golden light like Bill Mardigan's. I just want to, and I know I've been plugging a lot.
BillMardigan's.com for the best golden light.
They do it best.
Yeah. They'll come to your house.
If you want light and you want it golden, there's only one place to go.
Get a sack of friendship. What's in the bag?
Bill.
What's in the bag?
Bill Mardigan's.
Yeah, so there's golden light up in this bag. It's just pouring out. You can't even see into it because it's so bright.
Well, I'll tell you.
I reach into the bag.
You reach into the bag and you feel around. It feels like a solid dirt ground. Like you're reaching into the ground.
It's really good, you guys.
Can we try and put the gold back in the bag?
It's light.
Well, I'll ask the question again. Can you put...
It feels like ground at the bottom. Does it feel like there's a spatial differential? Like if you reach your hand all the way down into the bag, does it...
Oh, is it like Mary Poppins' bag? Is that what you're asking?
Yes.
It's like Mary Poppins' bag.
It's
does
like
anyone
that.
Have high knowledge of magic?
Well, okay, someone tell me who's seen Mary Poppins, what that
it's
means.
It's just a bag that...
Because as far as I know, here's how that movie goes.
Yeah, fix it, Dan.
Some chick shows up, flies around on an umbrella.
You don't remember her handbag?
And everyone dies.
Oh, she's got a wonderful bag.
I've never seen Mary Poppins. What does that mean? What does it mean?
It just means
a bag with it where everything can fit.
It's bigger than it looks.
A bag of holding.
Bag of infitude. What? Yeah, it's like a bag of holding. Yeah.
Infitude? What did you say?
I may have said that. I don't
She's
know if
got
I wanted
hat
to be.
Track in
wait,
there.
Didn't Mulrain? Didn't you say it felt like earth or dirt inside it?
Yeah, it feels like dirt. So
pull some dirt out.
I don't want you to tell me what to do.
I reach into the bag and grab the earth that she feels.
Yeah, you can dig in with your fingernails. It's not like a loose soil. It's like packed dirt ground, but you could get a bit
and
of it.
Grab some and pull
I
it
ask
out.
Ask again. Does anyone have detect magic? Obviously, it's a magic. Thing.
Yeah, so detect it.
I don't have detect magic.
It's been detected. It's a fucking bag that doesn't go by bag rules. You reach in it, and there's... it's a magic bag! Save a spell! I pull out some of this dirt, and want to hold it up. Look at it.
It looks like dirt.
I throw it, and I spit, and I twirl around into the tundra, yelling about my dad.
I poke my head... confident in my knowledge of that Bill Mardigan's?
Bill Mardigan's.
He's like the HBO guy, but different.
I poke my head.
It's going.
I poke my head in the bag.
You poke your head into the bag and you find yourself in a warm city bathed in golden glowing light.
Guys! I poke my head in the bag.
I think we found paradise in a bag.
It's nice. In a bag!
Paradise in a bag.
Get in there! Can we fit in there?
I thought that was cocaine.
If you want to find paradise, you go to Bill Mardigan's.
Let's go in, guys.
Wait, can we fit in there?
Yeah, we can.
Guys, it's a whole city. It's a whole beautiful city in here.
But if we go in there, then we're in a bag that anyone Yahoo can just find like we did. Should we first find a place to secure this bag? My recommendation is we dig a 3x3 hole. Well, talking in Minecraft terms, like, and then we put it down at the bottom, and then we all go into it. Well, no one can.
Maybe we should put a sign.
Your whole life you've been trying to get away from holes. Right, I mean, isn't it? I don't think I'm just. That's a reprise. That's not my take.
You called back something that nobody remembered.
Yeah. Skills at this.
One of us could wait while the rest of us went out and I mean this bag is sitting out in the middle of the
tundra. Come on. Who's gonna? Well, what's the worst they're gonna do with it? They're gonna stick their hand in it and they're gonna get in a big argument about what it is. And they'll either come in or they'll leave it there.
It's like a portal, probably, right? Maybe it's a portal. It's not really doesn't have anything to do with what you don't stay in the bag.
Yeah.
Maybe.
How do we get out of the bag then? We have that ladder. We should use the ladder so that we can climb back out of the bag if we need to.
The ladder of fears?
I volunteered to go into, guys, I volunteered to go into this bag and devil may care.
Why don't we send you and the bird? Because the bird can fly and fly back out of the bag.
Okay, venture.
Not to be this person, but I wanted to go to the bag a long time ago. I want to go in the bag.
She did find the bag.
And I would like to go into it.
Okay.
I've always dreamt of being the person who jumps in the bag first.
I take my foot out of the bag and go, ooh, sorry.
And I do a like, ooh, yeah. And I like puff my chest out as much as I can.
All right. Go, ladies first. Go ahead, Mallory.
All right. I jump into the motherfucking bag. Head first. Mouth open.
That seems unnecessary. I don't know why you have to take that risk.
Yeah, that was you have a backstory
always,
that hasn't
always
been
make an entrance.
I get that.
Yeah.
All right.
You dive into the bag head first, mouth open. You find yourself in this warm city. You find yourself jumping out of a similar bag into this warm city. You hear the sounds of chirping birds and babbling brooks. There's a small gnome sitting on a small toadstool, smoking a small pipe and fiddling with a comically large shoe buckle.
It's Bill Mardigan's.
Hi, me and my friends were looking for the Tarragon of Virtue. I'm bewildered. Alice in Wonderland. What's
Greetings? I'm Fizzbulb.
Hey, Fizzbulb, what is this place, and do you know a Bill Mardigan?
This is Bill Mardigan's, the town that's everywhere.
Oh. And it's Dollar Shrimp Shooter Night.
Welcome.
Thank you. Am I able to call up to my friends?
Yeah, you jumped in here through a bag, and then there's a similar bag on the floor that you climbed up out of to get here. So you could probably shout into it.
Pop my head out.
Yeah.
All right. It's cool, guys.
Jesus Christ!
Oh, Jesus Christ!
What the fuck? Holy shit!
Don't ever fucking do that again.
It's like the ending to Seven.
Damn! I just shit my pants. I just shit in my pants.
It's real warm.
God damn it.
What's in the bag?
You guys gotta come down.
Why is she so out of breath?
I know. It was awkward. We were in the middle of her funeral.
I don't know. If you go not down the bag, do you come up out of the bag? I open the bag and call down. Is the bag that you're coming out of upside down, or is it right side up?
Yeah!
I cinch it and throw it. No, I'm kidding.
Let's go in, guys.
Let's go in the bag, everybody.
All right. Who wants to, I mean...
I go next.
I mean, so. You're already kind of half in the bag.
Yeah. Nice. All right. I go down nice. Head first, mouth open, nuts up, ass wide.
Yeah.
Ankles deep, ball nuts.
Nuts up, guys.
I got my ankles behind my head. I'm ready. I'm huffing tape head cleaner to dilate my asshole as I go in. That's a thing I learned from the gay community.
Great attitude. A great open mouth nuts up attitude. I love it.
Yeah.
I'm an advocate. I go in this bag an advocate.
Fag enabler, is that you?
Fag enabler!
Is that what that huffing thing is called?
That's another name for poppers.
All right, I jump in also with my hole where my penis used to be.
That happens also. You guys jump through into the Bill Mardigans. Soon you're all there.
Yes, we're all there now. So wait, this place is called Bill Mardigans? This realm? This place?
Yes!
Are Fizzbulb. You Bill?
No, I'm Fizzbulb!
Oh, right. I mean, how would I know that?
Fizzbulb. Fizzbulb, what is this place?
This is Bill Mardigan's, the town that's everywhere.
The town that comes with a side of coleslaw and cornbread.
Is this paradise?
No.
Shit.
I like to think so, though.
All right, enough, Fizzbulb. Don't fucking sell us on this town. Who's Bill Mardigan?
This is Bill Mardigan.
Okay, that's the name of the town? It's not a person?
No. Well, it might be a person. Let's not rule that out. I don't know. I just know it's the town that I love so much.
What goes on here at Bill Mardigan?
There's all sorts of fun. There's smoking and riddles and horseshoes.
One of those things
in that
is
order?
Awesome.
It's a Fuddruckers.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a fixin's bar. A bar with all kinds of salsas
and horseshoes. It's Bill.
Well, we should eat
Mardigan. They're smoking and riddles and horseshoes.
This place has almost everything.
There's no.
I can only.
There's no medicine.
Yeah.
There's no education.
Yeah, that's perfect. Because I wanted to smoke, she wanted to do horseshoes, yes. And he wanted riddles, and we were like, we're going to have to make three stops.
And
this
and
is
we
perfect.
All want cornbread.
Yeah. Bill Mardigan.
I don't have a lot of time. He doesn't have a lot of money.
Bill Mardigan.
What doesn't, I mean, like, you're clearly a guy that loves living in Bill Mardigan's. What doesn't this town have? What's your main problem with Bill Mardigan's?
I don't have any problems with Bill Mardigan's.
Did you?
Oh,
maybe he's not allowed to say.
Shit, oh, boy.
You got a little ominous there, Fizzbulb.
Bill Mardigan's is a place without problems.
Okay. Hey, amen.
I buy it.
All right.
Why is there one tear running down your face right now?
That's just part of my charm.
Fizzbot, do you sit here or do you guide people around?
Yeah. You can't come in without answering a riddle.
Oh, snap.
All right.
I was hoping we'd get to the smoking first.
I love
okay.
riddles. As a gnome myself.
Go ahead. We can't get in without answering a riddle, but we already know from his sales pitch that our reward will be either horseshoes or smoking.
Or more riddles.
More riddles.
Right. It's just riddles for more riddles.
Guys, it's in
this
the
is
bag.
A terrible town.
It's in the bag. I'm a gnome. I love smoking and riddles. This is a slam dunk. Give us your best shot there, Fizzbulb.
I don't really like this one, but what has four and then two and then three? I don't really like riddles.
The number 423.
Yeah, that's the actual answer.
Is that it?
He does a flip.
Oreo tower with extra fudge.
Wait, stop. What? The number 423?
Yeah, it has a 4, then a 2, then a 3.
But also, isn't that an analog for the riddle of the Sphinx?
Yeah, and everyone answers that way. My personal favorite answer is a gnome with an engorgement potion.
Wait, what?
Penis.
Oh my god, you have that?
No, it's a riddle. I mean,
you want an engorgement potion? Have.
Yeah, I wanted an engorgement potion.
You should go to Bill Mardigan's.
For fucking great.
If you want a brand new dick, you go to Bill Mardigan's.
Wait, so it has four things? Riddles, smoking, horseshoes, and replacement penises?
No, just potions of engorgement. And other stuff. Other potions. We got all sorts of potions. All
right. Well, let's go, guys.
Wait, well, it's 10 o'clock. We made it into Bill Mardigan's. It looks like that's a cliffhanger, huh?
Yeah.
Maybe we can get like a beeper and it'll buzz when you're ready for us. Or...
Yeah, I don't know how to close the show.
Fizzball, so now that we have access into Bill Mardigan's, what lays in store? Or lies in store? Lies?
I mean, it's a lovely place. There's all sorts of stuff lying in store.
Is there skee ball?
There's skee ball. What's that? There's
when you go to Chuck E. Cheese's and they have the thing.
It's like it's like roly horseshoes.
Oh, like roly horseshoes.
Yeah, yeah. That is the best description of skee ball I've ever heard. I bet the pitch was roly horseshoes.
Roly horseshoes.
You like horseshoes, but you don't think it's roly enough. Skee ball.
Yeah.
Micro bowling. No.
It?
No. Yeah. Horseshoes is, yeah.
All right, well, oh. Guys, looks like we walked into to a nice bag and we're in a warm city full of whimsical creatures.
Yeah. I don't know how else we could, I mean, we have to still end the show.
All of your skulls burn red hot with a blinding surge of pain.
What the fuck? Wait,
we were so close to being out. I can't believe
you suggested. Ouch. What?
Yeah. You're just dizzy momentarily as this pain is just throbbing through you, and then it recedes.
Jesus.
It recedes. You still feel a burning in your soul.
It's the shrimp shooters.
You don't
want to use the old shrimp shooters.
Wait, did it maybe disable the soul bombs?
You don't know, man.
I think that was a reminder.
Not comfortable.
It sounds like the shot clock is ticking right now on our skull curses, our soul curses.
I think it was like when they do a fun X-Files like episode, but they felt like it was too fun, so they end with the smoking guy like looking at a car.
That is exactly perfect. Yeah. That would happen. It was just like a fun one where a guy's too lucky, and at the end,
I guess that guy was made out of algae.
Yeah.
And then they're like, yeah, but for a reason. Yeah.
They are coming.
Yeah. Cliffhanger! All right, thank you.
I'm on Sunday, 11 to 6.
Thank you once again, everybody. One more time, Mitch Hurwitz, Aaron McGathy, Spencer Crittenden, Kumail Nanjiani. I'm Jeff Davis, your mayor, of course, Dan Harmon. Thank you, one and all.
Thank you.